Hi, I'm Liz. I'm part of the Free Church, and it's great to be with you today. Today, as we continue working through this series on the Book of Acts, we're going to go on a sea voyage. And, spoiler alert, it won't be plain sailing. So buckle up your life jacket, take some quails, and we'll join Paul on his journey through the storm. To set the scene for you, Paul was a key figure in the early church, whose story you can read in the Book of Acts, and who wrote much of what we know as the New Testament. By the time of the story we're going to look at today, he'd been a prisoner on trial for over 2 years. The Jewish authorities, threatened by his provocative and passionate preaching of Jesus, accused Paul of stirring up riots and desecrating the temple. After a series of hearings in front of religious leaders and political officials, which Paul used as an opportunity to tell even more people about Jesus, he asserted his right as a Roman citizen to be tried in Caesar's court in Rome, and so to Rome he went, sailing under the guard of a kindly centurion called Julius, with two friends, Luke, who wrote this account, and Aristarchus, who was his travelling companion. The journey began without incident, but after changing ships at Lycia, which is in modern-day Turkey, things began to go downhill. The wind was strong. The ship couldn't hold its course. The going was difficult and dangerous. Paul, not at his most encouraging, warns the crew that the voyage is going to be disastrous and bring great loss to ship and to our own lives also. Ignoring Paul's advice, they sailed on regardless. Well, they really should have listened, because things go from bad to worse. And we're going to pick up the story now in Acts 27, verse 13.
Acts 27, 13 to 20. When a gentle south wind began to blow, they saw their opportunity, so they weighed anchor and sailed along the shore of Crete. Before very long, a wind of hurricane force called the Northeaster swept down from the island. The ship was caught by the storm and could not head into the wind, so we gave way to it and were driven along. As we passed to the lee of a small island called Carda, we were hardly able to make the lifeboat secure, so the men hoisted it aboard. Then they passed ropes under the ship itself to hold it together. Because they were afraid they would run aground on the sandbars of Syrtis, they lowered the sea anchor and let the ship be driven along. We took such a violent battering from the storm, and the next day they began to throw the cargo overboard. On the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. When neither sun nor stars appeared for many days and the storm continued raging, we finally gave up all hope of being saved.
Fortunately, few of us will ever face such a dramatic storm at sea. But perhaps the image of the uncontrollable waves threatening to engulf the boat and drag the travellers into the depths serves as a powerful metaphor for the difficult times we will face in life. Because the truth is that for all of us, storms will come. The Bible never shies away from this. Pick a Bible character, any character, and I can guarantee you that their life wasn't all calm waters. Quite literally, for Noah and his ark, or for Moses, leading the Israelites from slavery through parted waters to the shore of the Red Sea. Or for Jonah, making his sea journey in the belly of a whale. We could also think of Jesus' disciples caught in a storm on the Sea of Galilee that was enough to make even hardened fishermen panic. And of course, Paul, who knew a bit about a stormy life, having been shipwrecked 3 times and spent a day and night adrift in open seas, which you can read about in 2 Corinthians 11. Yes, storms will come. Perhaps you're facing one today. They can rock our relationships, they can blast away our health, shake our financial security, and pummel our faith. Sometimes we'll see them coming. Sometimes, like Paul, we're cruising along in a gentle south wind when, bam, a northeaster sweeps down and we're left struggling to keep our head above the waters, feeling battered and hopeless. Which is how Paul and his crew felt, hopeless. Have a look at verse 20. It says, "We finally gave up all hope of being saved." In the Greek text, the verb for gave up is the same as the one you'll find later in the passage, in verse 40, that describes the cutting loose of anchors. I imagine that the hopes that anchored these men were cut loose and plummeted into raging seas. The hope of seeing their friends and family again. The hope of a future beyond that ship. The hope of being rescued, all sinking beneath the waves. It's worth mentioning here that a biblical understanding of the word hope is not one of wishes or daydreams. You know, I hope my kids tidy their room without being asked, and that never happens. Or I hope Fulham don't lose this week. That always happens. Biblical hope is altogether different. It could be described as confident expectation. There's a certainty to it. It's solid. It's an anchor. When life is stormy, how easily the things we put our hope in are cut loose. The hopes that we place in our family and friends. The hope of the future that we wish for. The hope of being rescued from our circumstances can so easily sink beneath the waves. But as we read on into Paul's story, we discover that hope hadn't sunk without trace. That hope could be salvaged. Hope was restored. So how did Paul and his crew recover their hope? And what can we learn from their experience that will give us reason to hope in the storm? Let's read on. We're going to read from verses 21 to 26.
Acts 27:21-26. After they had gone a long time without food, Paul stood up before them and said, "Men, you should have taken my advice not to sail from Crete. Then you would have spared yourselves this damage and loss. But now I urge you to keep up your courage, because not one of you will be lost, only the ship will be destroyed. Last night an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve stood beside me and said, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand trial before Caesar, and God has graciously given you the lives of all who sail with you. So keep up your courage, men, for I have faith in God that it will happen just as he told me. Nevertheless, we must run aground on some island.'"
Do you notice the change in Paul in the passage that we've just read? At the very start of his voyage, he was a bit of a doom-monger, predicting death for all on board. And just a few verses ago, he was hopeless and helpless. And now here he is, full of confidence, cheering on the crew, although he couldn't resist a little "I told you so" in verse 21, which is very Paul. You know, what brought about this change? Well, despite all his hopes being cut loose, Paul found a new hope, a promise. In a dream, an angel had visited Paul and passed on a promise from God. "Everyone on the ship will survive," the angel told him, "and you will get to Rome." That was the key to Paul's newfound hope. It was anchored on the immovable promise of God. What anchors your hope? What keeps you going in stormy times? Is it loved ones? Is it self-reliance? Or even material security? These things, though positive, can so easily be cut loose. And I think we've really experienced that over the past few months as the relationships and routines that have anchored us have been cut away. But the promise of God holds fast. Though they might not be delivered via an angel, each of us can know the promise of God anchoring our hope. For some of us, that promise has been spoken very specifically, perhaps through a particular Bible passage, or through hearing God in prayer, or through the Holy Spirit-inspired words of a friend. Let that promise be the reason for your hope. And all of us can anchor our hope on the many promises that God has made to us in the Bible, such as the promise that God never leaves us in Hebrews 13, or that he will give us the strength to stay afloat when times are tough. I can do all things in him who gives us strength, it tells us in Philippians 4. And the promise that ultimately we will be free from death, sorrow, and pain. Over the past few months, I've been anchored by the promise of God's presence. These have been turbulent times with lots of change, and at times I've felt adrift. They've also been stormy times of great loss and loneliness for many in our community. What has anchored me is the promise that whether we are together or apart, whether we are isolating, homeschooling or at work, whether we know grief, anxiety, despair or joy, God is ever present. He is ever present with us. He is ever present in times of trouble, it tells us in Psalm 46. Perhaps that's a promise that you need to hear today. Interestingly, Paul's dream wasn't the first time that God had promised him he was going to make it to Rome. If we flick back to Acts 23, verse 11, we read this. The following night, the Lord stood near Paul and said, "Take courage. As you have testified about me in Jerusalem, so you will also testify in Rome." But the gales of the storm had blown that promise from Paul's mind, and he needed a reminder. Do you need a reminder? Do you need to remember a promise that God has spoken to you? Do you need to recall a Bible promise that used to anchor you, but that you've drifted from? Let it anchor your hope again, securing it in stormy seas. Of course, a promise is useless if we don't know or trust the person making it. I wonder if you remember learning to swim. I can't remember it for myself, but I remember teaching our kids to swim. And they would stand on the edge of the pool with their rubber ring and armbands wedged on, and they'd be looking terrified. And Mark and I would be in the water, arms stretched out to catch them. Jump in, I promise that I catch you. Jump in, I promise I won't let you go under. And eventually, they would jump. Because they knew us well enough to know that we would not let them sink. When Paul received that promise from God, he knew the promise maker. He knew him well enough to trust that he would keep his promise. In verse 23, he uses that wonderful phrase, "the God to whom I belong." God's promises weren't an abstract concept to Paul. They were received in the context of a relationship. God and Paul had history. He could trust that God wouldn't let him sink. Which, if we take a sneaky peek forward to verse 44, we can see that he didn't, because it tells us everyone reached land safely. We can only put our hope in God's promises, confidently expecting them to be fulfilled, if we trust him to fulfill them. And to do that, we need to get to know the promise maker, to spend time talking with him in prayer, to read about his character in the Bible, to share stories of his faithfulness with the people around us, with our crew. And then we'll discover another reason for hope, that he who promises is faithful. So in the middle of this fearsome storm, Paul found hope in the promise and the person of God. But what about the rest of the crew? They didn't have the luxury of an angelic visitation. How did they salvage their hope? Let's read on in the story and see if we can find out. And we're going to read now from verse 27 to 36.
Acts 27:27-36. On the 14th night, we were still being driven across the Adriatic Sea, when about midnight the sailors sensed they were approaching land. They took soundings and found that the water was 120 feet deep. A short time later, they took soundings again and found it was 90 feet deep. Fearing that we would be dashed against the rocks, they dropped four anchors from the stern and prayed for daylight. In an attempt to escape from the ship, the sailors let the lifeboat down into the sea, pretending they were going to lower some anchors from the bow. Then Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, "Unless these men stay with the ship, you cannot be saved." So the soldiers cut the ropes that held the lifeboats and let it drift away. Just before dawn, Paul urged them all to eat. "For the last 14 days," he said, "you have been in constant suspense and have gone without food. You haven't eaten anything. Now I urge you to take some food. You need it to survive. Not one of you will lose a single hair from his head." After he said this, he took some bread and gave thanks to God in front of them all. Then he broke it and began to eat. They were all encouraged and ate some food themselves.
So it was Paul who gave the crew reason for hope. He made sure nobody was isolated, keeping this little seafaring community together on the ship. He tended to their physical needs, ensuring that they were fed and strengthened. And he reassured them that not one of you will lose a single hair from your heads. Most importantly, he pointed them to God. Did you find verse 35 familiar? Have a look at it. Paul takes bread and he gives thanks and he breaks it and begins to eat. Does it remind you of anything? Perhaps you recall Jesus feeding the 5,000 or celebrating the Last Supper or eating with the disciples on the journey to Emmaus. Certainly Luke wanted to make those connections for us. He wanted us to make those connections. He's showing us that Paul offered his fellow passengers more than just physical nourishment. He also offered them spiritual sustenance. He pointed them to Jesus, the God to whom he belonged, who had rescued him. Paul had been rescued from rigid rule following. Paul had been rescued from a past that he was ashamed of and a life apart from Jesus. And he trusted that God could rescue him and the crew again. Paul pointed the crew to the promise and the person of Jesus, his ultimate reason for hope. As we journey through life, let's try, like Paul, to give our fellow passengers a reason for hope. We need to look out for the people in our community, now more than ever, who are struggling to keep their heads above water, reaching out to them and ensuring that they don't become isolated. Let's look to their physical needs and offer practical help wherever we're able. But most importantly, let's point people to the person and promise of Jesus, the one who reaches out to us in the middle of stormy waters, who calms the wind and the waves with his words, and who ensures that we will reach land safely. Amen.